Because if you have a place that feels right for your life, other doors open. You can be living in a place where there's lots of opportunity, but if you feel that you can't really be who you are in that space, or that space doesn't work well for your metabolism, or you know, just or your emotions, then it doesn't fit.
This is Joe Longo, and you're listening to the Orange, a long-form interview podcast with University of Illinois alumni about their time on campus and how they got to where they are now. Today, we have a very special episode. Some might even call it strange. Cynthia Barrett is an actor best known for her memorable portrayal as Marsha Holland on the hit Netflix show Stranger Things. That's right, we're talking to Barb's mom. Barrett is an alum of the College of Fine and Applied Arts, where she received a Master of Fine Arts in Acting. Her Illinois college experience is certainly unique. She didn't do the whole undergraduate thing, but she did come back and teach for a semester. It's not the only time that she's paved her own path. Speaking with Barrett is a testimony to trusting yourself and finding the right path. It's advice I appreciate as I enter my final few semesters in college. Barrett didn't settle in acting cities like New York or Los Angeles post-university. Rather, she now lives in Atlanta, a new hub for film and television. But it's through Atlanta that Barrett landed on Stranger Things. The show is universally acclaimed and has garnered itself quite a following on social media, but Barrett notes it's not always positive. During our conversation, she expands on the pitfalls of social media for actors, which is something she's only recently gotten used to. So let's get straight into it. Without further ado, here's my talk with Cynthia Barrett. And so I want to start with the Stranger Things element. Can you first just kind of explain how you got involved with the show?
I'm an actor in Atlanta, Georgia. And that's where Stranger Things films. I got involved with it the way I get involved with anything in television and film. My agent sent me an audition. I put the audition on tape, then got a call back and went in and met with the Duffer Brothers and the casting director, Carmen Cuba, and the local casting directors, Chase Paris and Tara Bennett, and heard I was on call for it, waited a while, and then finally got the role. And that was for the first season, where I just did one scene on the phone and figured, okay, I'm done. Mm-hmm. And then the internet blew up with Justice for Barb. And so I ended up getting more work on the second season.
So was it, it sounds like it was a pretty natural process, just like any other show when you first got involved.
Yeah. I mean, when we first got involved, it was called something different. Nobody knew what it was. It didn't have all the secrecy that it has now. It's when it aired in July of 2016, then everything shifted. But before that, it was just this really cool show that we got that was filming in Atlanta that was looking for actors.
About that, you know, what is it? Is there a reason that you do live in Atlanta? As an acting, we often associate it, of course, with like the coastal cities or. You know, sometimes Chicago. Why for you Atlanta?
Well, Chicago is a great actor city, and I was there for a little while. I lived in New York City for a little while. I've never lived in LA. After school, I bounced around a lot trying to figure out where I needed to be. And in 2002, I was hired at Georgia Shakespeare Festival, and I came down here and immediately fell in love with Atlanta, a ton of the people here, the theater scene, and I finally had found where I knew home was going to be. 'Cause all the other cities, even though they're great theater towns, they just didn't really work for me personally. Even though I love going to work there and I love visiting there, like living there just didn't hit all the right buttons. So when I found Atlanta, I knew I was home, and I've been here since 2004.
Was it a concern that it would be harder to be an actress in Atlanta?
No, because for me, I've never been, I don't need to be famous. I don't need to have the leads and everything. I'm trained in theater, and that's what I wanted to do. So coming down to Atlanta there's good regional theater. There's great small professional theater. What in Chicago would be like the storefront theaters can always self-produce. It's also a wonderful city to live in. It's easy to get out of and to get to the beach or to get to the mountains. It has four seasons, but winter is the lightest one. So it had all the things that I needed in my life. And as an actor, it had great theater. And then it just happened to be that with tax incentives, the television and film world started coming to Atlanta. And so now I can do both. So I kind of feel like I came down here for me, and then the rest of the world just followed me, which is not true, but.
And is there, where are you from originally? Are you from the South?
No, I grew up in Bedford, Indiana. So I'm a Midwesterner.
Oh, so a Midwesterner.
Yeah.
Which would make sense as to why you got your undergrad at Indiana.
Yes, Indiana State was my undergrad. And then I moved to Albany, New York for a little while. And then I came back to the Midwest to go to school at U of I. I was looking at a bunch of different schools, but U of I was my top choice. So I was glad I was a grad student at U of I.
And when you were at Indiana, was your undergrad as well in theater acting?
Yes. Yeah, I wanted to be an actor since my parents tell me I was two when I decided that acting was what I was going to do.
So there was no other option?
Nope. I tried for there to be other options, and it never worked out. It could have worked out, like I could do those jobs, but I wouldn't be happy and I wouldn't be me. So yeah, I taught for a while. And
that's interesting. That's interesting. I wouldn't have considered, yeah, it's not the, you spent some time trying to do something that's maybe a little bit more conventional, and that wasn't right for you.
Yeah, I was a college professor for a little while, and I was trying to do that and act at the same time, doing regional theaters or small professional theaters. So I was teaching full time and then sometimes acting full time and then acting.
Where was this?
This was in the late 1990s, early 2000s, before 2004.
Interesting. And then in 2004, you came to the university?
No. Oh, wait. No, in 2004 is when I quit all the other jobs and came down to Atlanta.
Ah, okay. That makes sense. Now we have a timeline. going on to your time at a university, when you came back, what was it like being a grad student? We often, I feel like, associate college with being an undergrad, but being a, you know, getting your master's is a different take on the school.
Yeah, to me, I mean, I've listened to some of your other interviews, and everybody was able to talk about, you know, life on campus and that kind of thing. And my life was in Krannert. My life was in the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. That area is pretty much the only part of campus that I knew. I took one class in Champaign, in a building in Champaign. But I've been thinking about it, just how little of the college life I was a part of at U of I. Not because I didn't want to be, just because I was a graduate student. And when you're a graduate student, you're spending time teaching and then in your own classes. And you're supposed to be, you know, focusing on what you came there to study. So I didn't have time to go to basketball games because I would be in rehearsal, which is where I wanted to be. So
that's interesting. You didn't feel like you missed out on it because it wasn't necessarily where you were at in your life at the time.
Not at U of I. I did that stuff when I was an undergrad at Indiana. But once I was at U of I, I'd been out of school. I was in my mid-20s. So I was there to get the training that I wanted to get. This morning was asking people, what was the name of that bar that we hung out at? The Embassy down in downtown Urbana. You know, we would go to the Courier Cafe for dinner. It's not like I was just at Krannert, but like, you know, Greek life and student government and all of the other parts of the university I wasn't really part of, just because there wasn't time.
And so my brother was a graduate student as well at the university, and he, like you mentioned, that reminded me, he spent more time in like downtown Champaign, more in a, like you mentioned, 20-year-old, a little bit of an older crowd. Is that kind of how you felt you gravitated when you did want to go out?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my time was spent with my classmates and other theater majors or faculty members. So because we were in classes, then in rehearsal in the nighttime, and then after rehearsal sometimes would go out, or we'd, you know, go to dinner or something like that. But yeah, it was all Krannert people all the time. my roommates were also theater majors, other grad students. That was my world.
And as you mentioned, you came to grad school not directly out of your undergrad. Was it a concern that you were going back to school, especially in Central Illinois, kind of in your mid-20s, or were you comfortable with that idea of kind of coming back years later?
No, I was comfortable with it because I graduated and then I had a couple of years out working in theater, and I knew I wanted more training. I knew that I wanted more vocal training and more movement training, and grad school was always one of the goals, and U of I was one of the goals. That was my main choice of school. So I auditioned, I forget what year it was, but I auditioned one year and I didn't get in because they only take like six or seven people a year into the program. So I was the alternate that year. And then the following year I did get in. And looking back, I wouldn't have it any other way. I love the group of people that I came in with, the opportunities that were there when I was the 3 years that I was there. So even though at the time I was really disappointed that I didn't get in the first time I auditioned, it ended up working out the way it should have worked out. So because I was so focused on what I was trying to do, it didn't feel weird at all. I felt like I had the experience I needed to know where I needed to go next so I could make better use of my time there in grad school, which is very common. I mean, if you go right from undergrad to grad, you're just still in student mode and you don't always know what it is you need to study. So when I was a college professor, I would always tell my students, take some time in between undergrad and grad. Don't just go straight through. So I'm glad that I did it that way. And I wasn't, I mean, I know to you, mid-20s may seem really old, but it wasn't that old.
That's interesting. Well, and that's interesting that you've gone on to become or work as a professor. Was that also always a goal to act and teach, or did you stumble into teaching as well?
I stumbled into teaching. I taught when I was at U of I as a graduate assistant.
Right.
And one of my main focuses was on voice. It's where I felt was my weakest element, and I needed to learn a lot more about it. So I did extra studies. I assisted assistant coached some of the shows while I was there. And then when I left, I was doing some vocal coaching and I was living in New York City. I was in New York working my temp job and I had time. So I started kind of practicing applying for teaching jobs because they're supposed to be, you know, they were really hard to get academic jobs. There's a lot of hoops you have to jump through. So I had my letters of recommendation and I was writing and applying for voice teaching jobs. And I ended up getting several interviews. All of a sudden, I was faced with this idea of leaving New York City, which I was fine with because it wasn't working out for me anyway, not acting wise, but just life wise, and teaching. And the more I thought about it, I thought that might be a nice fit for me. And it was for quite a few years. It's just I started getting more acting work that I was having to turn down because I was teaching. And then that's when I realized this is the wrong combination for me. Even though I like teaching, it doesn't fill the same place in me that acting does. And it was killing me to turn down acting work. And also, the students deserve a teacher who that's what they want to do 100% of the time, that's their passion. And with me, I liked doing it. I still like doing it. But it wasn't the be-all and end-all for me. That's acting. So I left teaching in 2004.
And then that's when you moved down to Atlanta to act full-time.
Yeah, that's when I moved down to Atlanta. Now, I still teach. I just do it privately. I have clients and I do coaching sometimes for television and film. That's my day job, because as an actor in Atlanta, it's still pretty hard sometimes to make that the only source of income, as it is a lot of places.
So that's interesting. You left kind of what was a stable job, in some ways, of teaching to follow acting, which is can be very successful, but also, isn't always as stable. Was that a concern? Was that something you struggled with?
Oh yeah, everybody told me don't do it. Especially coming down to Atlanta and thinking that I was going to, be a coach as my day job, people thought I was nuts. What are you doing? Because university teaching is very, very stable, or at least it used to be. It may not be as stable as it was in the early 2000s, but I had to do it. Just like I had to try out New York. I had to give this a go. And I figured if I could put the private coaching, which I enjoy doing because I'm coaching people for life as life skills rather than acting skills oftentimes. So it's a broader type of teaching for me. But I thought if I could put that together with whatever acting work came through, that I would be okay. And I'm okay being poor. I don't need, I mean, security's fine, but it's good actually, but
I know what you mean.
it's not the main drive for
Yeah.
me.
So, that's interesting. Your comment really stuck out with me. I had to try out New York. You're with the few guests that I have on, I think you're the third one that has also gone to New York. And I know for me personally, that's something I'm interested in. I don't know. I'm wondering what you think about that. I had to try out New York. It seems like that's a very common theme.
Well, I think for actors especially, and coming from U of I, it's either Chicago, New York, or LA. Well, I now it's Chicago, New York, or LA, or Atlanta. And almost everybody I graduated with moved to Chicago, and they started a really fabulous theater company there, and they got to work together as a group. I went a different direction. I went on tour with a company out of St. Louis for a couple of years, which was great. I got to go internationally touring. And then I knew that I was going to have to go someplace in the United States and do what all actors do and pound the pavement and see how that works out. Because if I didn't do it, I would always be wondering. So I had to figure out which city I was going to go to. Chicago, I knew for some reason, and I don't really even know why, because I love Chicago, but I knew it wasn't the place that I should go. So I lived in Albany, New York before. I knew I loved New York City, and so I chose to move there. So I lived in Queens for a while and pounded the pavement there, stood in lines for auditions, and learned that I don't have to live in New York City. And that the cool thing is, when I left New York City, when I found Atlanta, I have never thought, oh, I need to now move to LA, or oh, I need to move to someplace else. No, I know I'm home. Even if the television and film world left Atlanta, I don't think I would leave. And that's a really important thing. Because if you have a place that feels right for your life, other doors open. You can be living in a place where there's lots of opportunity, but if you feel that you can't really be who you are in that space, or that space doesn't work well for your metabolism, or or your emotions, then it doesn't fit. Even if I was working on Broadway, well, if I was working on Broadway, and I probably could put up with New York, but I didn't have the patience to do everything that it was going to take, and the time that it was going to take to see if that would happen.
That's really powerful. Wow, I think I see even some courage in that, and being able to say, a confidence in being able to say, this isn't this route that everyone else wants to do isn't for me, but this, kind of make my own route and be confident in that. That's really admirable.
Well, it's the only way that I could do it. And I think it's important, especially for artists, to know that there is no one way to make this happen. If you would have told me in 2004, oh, all this television and film work's going to come to Atlanta, you're going to be fine, I would have laughed at you. No, nobody saw that coming. it's my hope that the United States can continue to diversify artistically. I always said that I wish that every town could have its own actors, just like it has its teachers and its lawyers and its doctors. So it's kind of nice that Hollywood has moved to other cities. There's filming going on all over the place now.
And do you feel, of course, being in Atlanta, you don't have some of the, like, Hollywood. I spent my summer interning in L.A. and coming from Chicago, I have a whole idea of what L.A. is based on TV and going out there. It fits some of that, but, you know, some of that, quote-unquote, superficiality or the stereotypes of L.A. of being an actor, do you feel like it's positive for you not to necessarily have to deal with some of that stuff? Or do you feel like you still do, even
well,
though
I mean,
in L.A.?
There are elements of every business that can have a superficial, people can take superficially, especially in the arts. The cool thing about Atlanta is that it was a smaller community. There aren't as many actors here, or at least there didn't used to be. So we all knew each other. And when an Atlanta actor would get hired, especially in television and film, everybody would be like, yay, I went to an Atlanta actor. So we were all, so a win for one of us was a win for all of us. And this community is very open with sharing information and training and being very kind to each other. And that could be part of the Southern culture. That's a very positive thing. That's very specific to Atlanta. Even people, when they come here, they always are saying, oh, everybody's so nice and friendly and encouraging. And that's the type of culture that I know in the acting community, we have tried to make sure that continues.
And have you noticed a difference in Atlanta since 2004 when you first moved there to, you know, now over 10 years later and the
the
popularity of the acting
community? People are moving here a lot because of the television and film work. So the acting community has grown exponentially in the last, especially like the last 5 years, people moving here from LA. So where I used to go on auditions and I would know almost everybody, now I don't anymore.
And so you mentioned there's a camaraderie with Atlanta actors. Is that something you noticed when you did book Stranger Things Stranger Things did get popular?
The cool thing about Stranger Things is there are a lot of Atlanta actors in that show for the whole group of us. And it's really I don't want to speak out of turn here, but I think it's really one of the first shows where the local actors have had some pretty big roles that has hit as hard as big as it has. The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead is actually, that's probably the first one.
Right, yes.
Yeah. I lost my train of thought, sorry.
Yeah, no, you're good. So you said, if off the top of your head, if you know any, what are some of the other Atlanta actors that have worked on the show with you?
Well, Catherine Dyer played, what's her name in the first? Connie Frazier. Randy Havens,
yes,
who plays Mr. Clark. Aaron, who plays Mr. Holland, my husband. He's actually out of Tennessee now.
Yes.
Nice. Let's see. Shannon Purser, who plays Barb. She was Atlanta. Steve,
yes.
Joe Keery, he was an Atlanta actor. He's now L.A. But
yeah. And I noticed that you said, so Barb and your husband in the show are both Atlanta actors. How is that dynamic working with fellow Atlanta actors that have to be your family on the show?
Well, I've never met Shannon. I never had any scenes with her. But Aaron, I was thrilled when I saw him because I've seen him on stage. I've never worked with him as an actor, but I've watched him quite a bit. So it's very comfortable. You know, when you do theater, you get to know people because you're working with them long hours and in pretty intimate situations. So then when you get to a film or television set with these same people, there's a shorthand. You know, it's easy to work with each other because you, especially if you've worked with them before, you know, I'm not speaking English here.
No, I know what you mean.
There's a familiarity to it.
And so what's it like being on, you know, it is such a popular show, but I imagine as an actor when you're working on it, it doesn't necessarily feel like that in, you know, when you're doing your scenes in real time.
No, when because it's the same as any other show when you're working on it. You're trying, you know, you're trying to tell the story and give the directors what they want. The only difference with it, especially in the second season, was how secretive things needed to be, because the show was so popular and people were trying to get information on it. So there was a non-disclosure agreement that was a bazillion pages long, it felt like. And I just had to be very, very careful of, I couldn't tell anybody that I was, that I, my character was coming back. I was in a play at the same time as one of the scenes were filmed, and I had to tell them, but I had to then, you know, I had to swear them to secrecy. They couldn't tell any of the other cast why I might be gone. I didn't end up missing any performances, but just the tension of trying not to make a mistake and leak information inadvertently. That's the only difference.
Yeah. It was, did you find that was hard to do? I imagine, like, were you even able to tell your family, or is that something that you know, that is kept very, very tight?
It has to be kept very, very, very tight. My husband knew, but I have a niece and a nephew, and I couldn't tell them at all. And I had to make sure that, you know, he's here with me, that he didn't make anything slip in front of them, because they're teenagers. Mm-hmm. And the minute they would find out, it would be all over the place. You know,
even, right, of course. That I imagine that's a little stressful. That's, you know, you're doing a whole lot, besides just acting, but making sure things for extended periods of time too. It's not like
Yeah, no, it was over a year where I couldn't say anything, which is, you know, it's fine, but it's easy when it's not a show that's such a big deal and people aren't asking you about it all the time. I would get asked at least once a week, are you going back on season two? And my answer, which I just finally came up with the answer, is I have no idea. I don't know. Because I thought, okay, that's not a lie, because even if I got cut out, I could still say I don't, even if I filmed, that doesn't mean that I know I'm going to make the final cut. So I could say, I don't know, and leave it at that. Instead of saying, well, I filmed something, or no, and I'm not on it, or anything like that. I could just say, I don't know, because I don't know if I'm going to make the final cut, and I wasn't lying.
So I'm going to try that right now for season three. Do you know if you're going to come back?
I honestly have no idea.
I imagine.
I would be highly surprised, because I think that storyline is finally done. But maybe, you know, as a Citizens of Hawkins, or if something happens with Mrs. Wheeler and her friends are there, I don't know. I also think I've read that they're going to focus on some interpersonal stuff with the kids as they're growing.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Dealing with them and high school and that kind of stuff.
And is it, this isn't the only show that you've worked on, you know, you've done some work, I'm pulling up your IMDb currently, mm-hmm. but you've worked on, like Drop Dead Diva and a few other shows, Vice Principals, that are, you know, popular shows. I'm wondering if you don't mind me asking, what's it like to be, you know, sometimes a character that you don't always know if you're going to return? Is that hard, or, you know, what is that dynamic?
Well, the first thing I ever booked was Drop Dead Diva, and I ended up going back on that show a couple of times, and it's always fun to go back. I mean, it's always fun when you've been there before and then people know who you are, but it's also gotten to the point here in Atlanta where I've done enough shows that, and I've also coached on some television work, so I've been on the crew, where I know people there. So it's always like, hey, how you doing? And people figuring out where they worked with each other before. And you go and you do the work and you do the best job you can, and then you let it go. And if you get asked to come back, great. If not, I just don't even think about it. It's like on to the next thing. So I go, I do my work, enjoy the people that I'm with when I'm there, if I know them or if they're new, and then leave. And then go on to the next audition, usually. I mean, I was on set for something Monday and Tuesday of this week. And then tonight we've got to tape a couple of auditions. So
it's always looking forward.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that the television and film work is really helpful. There's always something around the corner and you never know. I mean, with theater, oftentimes a lot of the theaters will all audition at the same time of year, and they'll set their season with their actors like a year in advance. So if you don't have a play coming up and you don't have something to self-produce, it can look kind of bleak. But with television and film work, it's constantly, at least it has been, kind of constantly moving through. So, you know, I could check my email after this interview and have another audition or have booked something. So it's just constantly churning, which is very helpful to me. It keeps me going, and it keeps me out of that, oh, I'll never work again type of feeling.
And I want to move on to, I was in researching for this. I stumbled upon your online portfolio, and you had an interesting line when you were kind of recapping your work with Stranger Things. You said, so I booked a cool little role on this little show for Netflix. It was playing the mom of a teenager named Barb. The show has blown up, and the internet now says my character is a bad mother. So I kind of latched on to that end line. Is that something you noticed? Social media for any show, but especially this. Did you notice that people weren't necessarily happy with your character?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is the first show where I have a character that anybody had any comment about. So it was my introduction to being an actor playing a character that the social media notices. I knew from my audition what I was doing with that scene. And I knew, so when I put it on tape, I had a certain take on it. When I went into the room in front of the Duffer Brothers, I had that same take on it, and they didn't give me any adjustments. And when I was there filming, I was staying in that same vein, giving them, you know, some variety, but staying in that same vein. And then they cut the scene the way they cut the scene, which was also, you know, going in the same direction I'd always been going. So I was very confident in the story that we were telling, which was how my mom would have reacted if my best friend Laura called her and said, hey, I can't, where's your daughter? And reassured her that, oh no, yeah, she was here. She stayed the night with me and I just haven't seen her after school. My mother would not have gotten upset about it. She would have been like, okay, yeah, Lauren and Cynthia had a fight and she's just gone to get a donut or something and she'll come home soon. But then when the internet blew up about how bad, well, the internet blew up about Barb, but then also about Barb's parents, it hurt. I was surprised that it hurt because I'd felt so, you know, I'd felt good about our choices. And the Duffer Brothers even had to do, or they didn't have to do, but they did there was a newspaper article about the Duffer Brothers defending the choice about Barb's parents not being, well, seeming like they're not upset, but just them not following that storyline because that wasn't the main story. And of course, I mean, they even said, you know, of course they're upset. Of course they're looking for her. We just don't have the camera pointed that way. So that when the Duffer Brothers said that, yes, all this stuff was happening, they just didn't film that. That made me feel like, okay, our choices were good. I didn't mess up as an actor and not give them what they needed. But it's yeah, the social media is like an actor cannot read reviews. And that's pretty easy to not read a review because you see the article and you don't read it. But when stuff blows up on social media, it's harder to not see it because it feels like it's right in your face. So you may be on social media for something else and then this comes across your newsfeed and there are individual comments instead of a big article that you then have to go read. So I'm still figuring that out. I mean, you know, I don't have to deal with it anywhere near what other actors have to deal with. I mean, famous people, what they have to deal with on social media, I can't even fathom because I've had just a teeny tiny little bit of the ice, you know, teeny tiny little chip of ice instead of this big iceberg that I know is out there for a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine, and it's been a conversation with the show, especially with some of the kids and the younger actors. There's been a lot of backlash on the way that social media is talking about them. Is that something you follow, or are you, you know, kind of focused more on the craft of the show itself?
Oh, I've seen it. Yeah. Especially, you know, talking about these kids who are 13 years old, as if they're adults. I was glad that people were standing up for them. And I mean, I don't go looking for that stuff. So I haven't like read a whole bunch of it. I've just seen,
of course.
I've seen little things come across mainly on Twitter. But I mean, I'm glad that people are looking out for the kids. I think, well, the whole country is in the midst of a huge change that hopefully will, you know, end up with more respect for all kinds of people. And young actors will be included in that.
Yeah, I think that's good. I think that brings up a good point. It's not, you know, it's, of course, there's the Hollywood aspect, but I think you're right. Social media, not even just social media, but our country as a whole could use some, you know, positivity and camaraderie.
Yeah. And looking out for each other and respecting what we say, or respecting other people in how we speak about them. And mm-hmm. and not crossing some of these lines that, right. Or people even recognizing that there's a line there.
That's pretty much all I had. Is there any other topics or anything else you'd like to discuss before we close?
No, did we talk enough about U of I?
That was what I was going to come back to. So I like to end with kind of what are your favorite memories on campus?
Well, all of the, most.
Or did you have a favorite show that you did?
Oh, yeah. It was the last one that I did. It was called A Shayna Madel by Barbara LeBeau. And it was about a family who half of them had come to America during the Holocaust and half of them were caught in the Holocaust and the aftermath when the one surviving member of the family does get to come to America afterwards. That was my favorite piece, but I loved every play that I did there. I mean, the professors I got to work with and a lot of my fellow students have gone on to do wonderful things, and you know, they're actors in Chicago and casting directors in Chicago and teachers in Chicago. I think one of my favorite things about being on campus were a lot of my memories have snow in them. And maybe it's because I live in the South and I don't get as much snow. But when
that's funny.
I know it's like it was only in when you contacted me about this interview that I started thinking about U of I. And I mean, I remember walking from my apartment in Urbana to school in the snow. And this was, you know, this was pre-Google, this was pre-internet. So then walking to the computer center to work on whatever paper I had to work on. And we had I think they still have it, the Armory Free Theater, which was,
yes, yeah,
which was a totally student run place in the Armory, and I loved those shows, you know, going to see those or participating in those during the weekend, on the weekends.
That's a good space. I unfortunately don't make it to as many shows as I'd like to there, but I used to live near the Armory, and I would remember just like walking late at night, or if I were studying in the Armory, I'd go into go past the theater, and it's just not even just that, but there's a lot of great theaters and of course great students and great teachers, but the spaces themselves are just very, you know, high quality, which is, you know, which is really fortunate for the school.
Oh yeah, one of my favorite rooms on the planet is opera rehearsal in the Kraner Center. I have
really,
yeah, I love that room. Right, because of, you know, what happened, one of the things that happened in that room, but that room is in my dreams.
Did you perform opera, or did you just use the space?
No. We just, the theater department would share that space. Mm-hmm. So we would have classes and opera rehearsal. So there was drama rehearsal, opera rehearsal, and then there were the studios, which are no longer there. They've moved them to the other side of the building. Mm-hmm. But the Kraner Center, if you go into the parking lot, there are the pylons, or the pillars that used to be the hallway where the mm-hmm. studios were. There are still drawings in pencil, because the last time I was there, I went to look for them on those columns that used, because that used to be the walls in between the acting studios when we were students there in the 90s. For what it's worth.
And you kind of just alluded to this. Have you come back, or how many times have you come back and visited since you graduated?
Well, since I graduated, I came back in 95 and taught for a semester. So I got another semester on campus. And then I was with a touring show that we brought to Krannert. So I got to perform at Krannert doing that show for like a couple of performances. And then I've been back just to visit a couple times. The last time was maybe 3 or 4 years ago, just going through to Chicago and swung by to see old professors.
Yeah, stopping in.
What?
Cool. I'm just saying, are you stopping in by on your way to Chicago?
Yeah.
So my last question is I usually like to end with as a grad student, as a successful actor, and as just a successful human being today, what is your advice, or if you had any advice, what would you impart to current students, graduate or undergrad?
To trust your gut and to know that what it is that your mind and your gut tells you you need to do, you can do it. Don't waste time with the, oh, maybe I can't. What if I, and this is mainly for artists probably, oh, what if I'm not good enough? That's a waste of time. The world needs you and it needs what you have to offer. So don't waste the world's time doubting yourself. If you've been given the need to do something or the desire to do something, that's enough. That means you can do it. You might not do it overnight. You might not do it, you know, when everybody thinks you should do it, but it can be done. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that does. That's good. That's good advice.
Well, because I think a lot of artists, we waste time doubting ourselves. I know I did for a long time, and I let that get in my way, and it's not necessary.
Yeah, I like that, and I think you know, talking about your life, that's kind of what a theme I'm seeing is. You just got to go for it and see what happens. You can't always, it's hard to sometimes be in college and not have a plan, but there's some power in just letting things unfold.
Yeah. And sometimes not having a plan leaves you more open to wonderful things that people who have a plan and are on a road miss. That's one of the things when I was at U of I was so driven that I feel like I missed stuff because I was just focused on acting. And I didn't have as much fun as I probably could have had. I'm a lot more relaxed now, and nobody would say I'm a relaxed person, but I'm more relaxed now than I was then. Mainly, I think, because I've finally gotten to a point where like, yeah, I can do this. And even if people tell me I can't do this, I'm going to do it anyway. So, and it's hard when you're in your 20s, it's hard to get to that point. I mean, the part of that is because I've aged into it. But then I think, wow, if I could have gotten to that, if I could have had a bit more of that in my 20s, things might have been a little easier.
That's good stuff. I think I definitely can relate to that, you know, the drive to really make things happen immediately rather than wait. Or, you know, not necessarily wait, but, you know, let things, you know, kind of just fall into place.
Yeah, have patience that you're on a road and enjoy the view as you get, you know, as you go by it.
So that's my talk with Cynthia Barrett. But before we close, a few thanks are in order as always. Thank you to Cynthia for coming on the podcast. Thank you to our audio editor, Aaron Navarro. And finally, thanks to you for tuning in. As for the next episode, we'll be ending the semester on a high note with Scott Cochran, local businessman and bar owner. We'll see you then.